connection. For a curmudgeonly academic, C.S. Lewis may be far more beloved than he deserves to be. Millions of children know him as the author of The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe and the other fantastic Narnia tales. To moviegoers who saw Shadowlands, he's the nice character, played by Anthony Hopkins, who marries a woman dying of cancer and finally finds true happiness. But to readers of the Screwtape Letters, C.S. Lewis is something else altogether. He's speaking, at least his character Screwtape is speaking, for the devil. He's giving advice on how to make human beings miserable. For instance, he says, courtship is the time for sowing seeds that will grow up 10 years later into domestic hatred. As devilishly fun as he is, C.S. Lewis has a serious purpose here. He's trying to win converts to Christianity. Lewis himself was an atheist for the first 30 years of his life, but in the early 1930s, when he was teaching at Oxford, he became what he called a reluctant convert himself, partially through conversations with his friend and fellow prof, J.R.R. Tolkien. 10 years later, he was dedicating the Screwtape Letters to Tolkien. C.S. Lewis died in 1963, on the same day as President Kennedy, but his legacy lives on. Connection listeners, are you in the legion of C.S. Lewis loyalties? Have the Screwtape Letters made you laugh and shiver? And consider changing your evil ways. Today we're making the Screwtape connection. 1-800-423-8255 is the number to call. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also join us online at theconnection.org. Joining me in the studio today are two Lewis aficionados who'll be discussing the C.S. Lewis legacy tonight at the Cambridge Forum and Harvard University. Welcome to Kathleen Norris, poet and author of many books on spiritual themes, including The Cloister Walk and a forthcoming memoir called The Virgin of Bennington. Kathleen, welcome.
Thank you.
And welcome, too, to Dr. Armand Nicolai, a psychiatrist at Massachusetts General Hospital and professor of Harvard Medical School. He's the editor of The Harvard Guide to Psychiatry, and he teaches a course that compares the views of C.S. Lewis to Sigmund Freud. Dr. Nicolai, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Now, before we go much further, I'd like to give listeners a taste of what we're talking about, the Screwtape Letter. Here it is, as read by John Cleese of Monty Python fame.
My dear Wormwood, I note with grave displeasure that your patient has become a Christian. Do not indulge the hope that you will escape the usual penalties. Indeed, in your better moments, I trust you would hardly even wish to do so. In the meantime, we must make the best of the situation. There is no need to despair. Hundreds of these adult converts have been reclaimed after a brief sojourn in the enemy's camp and are now with us.
Now, as you can hear from that reading by John Cleese, in the Screwtape Letters, the enemy is God. Our father below is the devil, and the patient is the poor human being trying to make it in this world. Now, Kathleen Norris, this is an extraordinary way to come at Christianity, isn't it? Speaking through the devil.
Yes, and it's a lot of fun also. And I think the way he works with this book, you don't have to be a Christian to appreciate the devil's working. You can recognize this is just about human nature, and it's a very, very funny book. He does, of course, point out that the church is one of the devil's best allies on earth, and particularly those awful other people sitting in the pew that make the convert wonder really what he's doing there. And then when you recognize that this is the voice of the devil speaking, you can laugh it off.
Well, indeed, he's rather an endearing devil in a horribly evil sort of way, isn't he?
Oh, he's very clever. I mean, he's extremely funny, and dare I say, in the presence of a psychiatrist, I think the devil's a very good psychologist, at least. He seems to understand human beings all too well.
Indeed, we'll see how he taps into the human spirit and tries to get it on his side in a moment. But Dr. Nicolai, C.S. Lewis, as we said in the opening, was a convert. He was an atheist for the first 30-odd years of his life. Suddenly converted, said he was a very reluctant, the most dejected and reluctant convert in England. From a psychiatrist's point of view, how did it come about?
Well, that's a very good question. He was not only an atheist for the first half of his life, but he was a militant atheist.
Mm.
And he argued vehemently against the opposite view. And then something happened that he finds it in his autobiography, Surprised by Joy, somewhat He's very articulate, and he describes it in detail. But when it comes down to the last step, the leap of faith, he seems to lose his articulateness and say that, you know, I came to faith in Christ.
But he also says he came to faith through reason. It's not through lack of reason. It isn't sort of giving up the arguments that, well, we'll get to your Freudian arguments before, but he wasn't sort of giving up the logical argument. He said his reason led him to conversion.
Oh, yes. He says that this whole transition was very intellectual and very gradual. And he describes it in great detail. I mean, the influence of other people, the influence of certain books that he had read, and then he had never read the documents themselves, I mean, the New Testament documents. And then when he finally did, he found that they were much different than what he had thought they were. But the actual leap of faith, he says, he describes simply as, I was on a motorcycle heading for the zoo, and when I got on the motorcycle, I did not have this faith. And when I arrived at the zoo, I did.
Kathleen Norris, and I'd like to ask you both this. Do you think that C.S. Lewis is the patient in this book, that the young man whose soul, Wormwood, is being instructed by Screwtape to try to get on their side?
I think so, in part. And one of the remarkable things about Lewis, and I think one of the most admirable things about him as a writer, is how willing he is to use his own experience in everything. In the Narnia books for children, he's really using the experience of the death of his mother. And in this book, I think he is really giving us a kind of a catalog of what the Christian convert does go through. And in a sense, the Screwtape book is about what it takes to remain after that burst of conversion, entering Christianity through the zoo entrance, in a sense, what it takes to stay there, what it takes to stay in love with the people you live with every day after that first infatuation has worn off.
And he's doing this by telling you how to destroy relationships.
Yes, oh yes. If you follow the devil's advice, you will hate the person you've lived with for 10 years. If you try to go the other way, you might end up with more affection than not.
Dr. Nicolai, is it, though, a case that it was a work of its time? I mean, this was just the most awful period in European history. It was in the middle of World War II that he wrote the Screwtape letters. He had served on the front line in World War I. I mean, was that how this came about?
I think that they're timeless. And one of the reasons why they've kept their popularity is that the focus is on the human condition and human nature. And there's great psychological insight. And since human nature doesn't change over time, I think that's kept the interest in this book and the relevance.
I gather you both got several readings, but could we just have one each of your favorite passages?
There's one, I think it's on the sheet, that basically the remarkable thing, this was written in 1941, and people were reading it in 41, 42, and it says, the devil says that war can be quite amusing.
Yes,
you
I know.
You know, it's a, is it on?
Are we having problems here?
No, I think this is it. I think I can find it right here.
We could only afford one piece of paper connection, listeners, so we have to share.
Of course a war is entertaining. The immediate fear and suffering of the humans is a legitimate and pleasing refreshment for our myriads of toiling workers. How much better for us if all humans died in costly nursing homes amid doctors who lie? One of our best weapons, contented worldliness, is rendered useless. In wartime, not even a human being can believe that he is going to live forever.
So it wasn't the war, he says, that did it. Then what do you think did touch his soul so deeply that he became this kind of man with a mission, that the great Christian apologist of the era?
Well, I think he became hopelessly infected with hope. You know, that's the ultimate destroyer of everything that Screwtape and Wormwood are about. That if this person can maintain hope, even in a time of war, even when you know, there's another passage where the devil says, you know, keep the sight of those corpses coming because that really destroys them. I mean, the humans can't take that and still believe in God. Well, of course, Lewis had been in the trenches. He had seen corpses piled high in the trenches, and he had witnessed the devastation of World War II and still kept plugging away at this thing called faith. It is remarkable, but I also think it is a timeless story.
I might add something there, too. If you read his biography, Surprised by Joy, there are several influences that took place. One, there were faculty members at Oxford that had come to a personal faith that kind of jarred Lewis. I mean, he was disturbed by this and felt that they somehow were deserting him, and he felt somewhat lonely and out of place.
But he was converted together with J.R.R. Tolkien, wasn't he? Or J.R.R. Tolkien helped to convert him because he dedicated the Screwtape Letters to him.
Yes, actually it was two friends, Tolkien and Dyson, that met with him one night for dinner in his rooms at Oxford. And afterward they went for a walk at a beautiful place, a long path at Oxford called Addison's Walk, with deer in the fields and wildflowers on both sides. And after dinner, they continued talking and walked until about 3 o'clock in the morning. And during that time, what they talked about was myth. Tolkien's an authority on myth. And Lewis, of course, as a medievalist, was very familiar with the great mythologies. And all of these mythologies from the pagan cultures had a myth, a story, where about a god coming to earth, dying, and rising again. And Lewis was very familiar with this because he had spent a good part of his academic life studying it. But then he realized, and he always thought that the New Testament story was just another myth, and therefore dismissed it. But Tolkien said, no, these stories and all these pagan cultures have a purpose. They were put there by the Creator, his signpost, pointing to this event that would someday happen in history, that would be myth coming to fact. And Lewis then, when he, after this talk with Tolkien, began for the first time to read the New Testament in Greek and realized, as he said, it did not have the mythic taste, that this was something entirely different.
And there you are. Yes, Lewis converted. But Kathleen Norris, he was an unlikely champion of Christianity, wasn't he? I mean, he was curmudgeonly, as we said. He was a heavy drinker. He was a heavy smoker. He was not exact. I mean, we'll be looking at his definition of good and evil, but he was an unlikely champion.
Well, I think that depends on your perspective. In some ways, he sounds just like the people that Jesus is reputed to have hung out with in the New Testament, those who were drinking and carrying on and not terribly respectable. And I think it's foolish to try to make anyone, especially C.S. Lewis, into a plaster saint and say, well, he was a very good Christian, so he couldn't have, you know, been a smoker and a drinker and told bawdy tales, which is it's quite evident that he did all of that. I don't see a contradiction there. And Lewis, you know, Lewis knew, is very humble. I mean, he very much knows his own limitations and talks about how he's never had a selfless thought. You know,
his version of good and evil after the break. We're talking with the devil this hour. Is he about to snatch your soul? 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. I'm Judy Swallow. This is The Connection on NPR.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Coming up on Here and Now at noon, Mr. Cellucci goes to Washington. We'll have the latest on the governor's confirmation.
This is The Devilish Connection, the Screwtape Letters, written by the eponymous devil to his apprentice.
Aggravate that most useful human characteristic, the horror and neglect of the obvious. You must bring him to a condition in which he can practice self-examination for an hour without discovering any of those facts about himself which are perfectly clear to anyone who has ever lived in the same house with him or worked in the same office.
John Cleese, reading from the Screwtape Letters. The fruits of the conversation of C.S. Lewis from atheism to Christianity between the world wars is relevant today as during those turbulent times. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK to join the Screwtape connection. My guest today, who'll be debating this very topic at the Cambridge Forum tonight, are award-winning author Kathleen Norris and psychiatrist Dr. Arman Nicolai. The theme there, both of you, so many themes of how C.S. Lewis said the devil does his work. Kathleen Norris, first one, distract them from the key issues.
Oh, absolutely, all the time. Have us be very, very concerned with our things, what we think we need, little things. And like that passage read by Cleese, that we can spend an hour sort of thinking we're examining our conscience and we're never going to spot the one thing about us that drives everyone else we know crazy. That our ability to delude ourselves is really phenomenal, and it also is helping the devil do his work.
I think one of the things about Lewis's writings is that he has in these letters great psychological insight into what we're like as human beings.
Oh yes, I read it for the first time. I must admit, and the whole way through, I was thinking, "I'm so wicked. I'm going straight to hell." I'm sure so many people think just that.
Well, I think he puts his finger on what are blind spots in people. We all have blind spots, and of course. He has the devil make us completely unaware, and then to be sure that we don't become aware of our blind spots, so that the irritating traits in ourselves we're completely blind to, but very conscious of those in the person that we're with.
Well, indeed, I think that my favorite was, where is it, page one? Oh, yes, page 142, Kathleen, you probably agree as well, talking about the difference between men and women. And it says, a woman means by unselfishness chiefly taking trouble for others. A man means not giving trouble to others. As a result, a woman who's quite far gone in the enemy's service will make a nuisance of herself on a larger scale than any man except those whom our father has dominated completely. And conversely, a man will live long in the enemy's camp before he undertakes as much spontaneous work to please others as a quite ordinary woman may do every day. Thus, while the woman thinks of doing good offices and the man of respecting other people's rights, each sex, without any obvious unreason, can and does regard the other as radically selfish. It's beautiful, isn't it?
Oh, it's lovely. It's lovely. And I think one of the
marriage from hell, and we all live in them.
Oh, all the time. And one of the keys to this book is it's not depressing. You don't read it and think, oh, dear, I'm wicked. I'm really going to hell. You are laughing at yourself. And in laughing at yourself, you're also laughing at the devil. You know, you're sort of getting Satan behind you, as it were, to follow the good advice of Jesus Christ.
As women, do you agree with that description?
Oh, I couldn't possibly say.
That's very dangerous. To
very, very dangerous territory. And it does have resonances today, doesn't it? I mean, most of what he wrote does actually resonate today.
Because human nature doesn't change. I think that's what makes it so relevant today, is that I think people have always been basically alike during his time as they are today.
And there's a great debate over whether there really are differences between men and women in the psychological sphere. We know there are in the social and cultural sphere, which is sort of where that passage, you know, comes from, that men will look at things one way, women another, and then each one of them will think the other selfish.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Tony joins us now. Tony, hello.
Hello.
What point would you like to make, Tony? Oh, funny, Akio, we're lying here, yes.
Yes, that's okay. My question to the two panelists is whether they feel that C.S. Lewis was influenced at all by G.I. Gurdjieff's two books called Beelzebub's Tales to His Grandson. And it's called an Objectively Impartial Criticism of the Life of Man. Beelzebub, Gurdjieff was a mystic, and he wrote these books many years ago.
How many years ago, Tony?
Oh, quite some years ago. Gurdjieff wrote, you know, he was quite a prolific writer, and they're quite old. They predate T.S. Lewis's books.
Well, I'm afraid, Tony, you've got three blank faces here, but thanks for your call, and we'll go do some more research. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Let's go to Howard. Howard, hello. I hope you haven't got a question that's going to stump us a second time in a row.
Well, I don't know, but here's my question. the comments I've heard thus far, I thought I heard a contradiction, which I'd like to ask about. I thought I heard one of your guests say that Lewis said he came to faith in God through reason. Yet, a few moments ago, I also thought I heard your psychiatrist guest say that, in effect, it was a sudden emotional conversion. He got on a motorcycle, and when he got off, he was a believer. I've heard similar stories like that. For example, Charles Colson's sudden and apparently emotional conversion is very well known. I've heard Catholics, for example, acknowledge that there's a difference between faith and a pure or cognitive form of belief. So it seems to me like Lewis was perhaps a little bit confused about whether his belief came from his head or his gut.
Howard, I think, you know, there's a bit of a mea culpa here because it was me who said he came through it totally by reason, and I think Dr. Nicolai put me right. But Dr. Nicolai, let's clarify this once and for all.
Well, I think that if you read Lewis's works and his biography, you find that he's very wary of feeling and doesn't trust it. And this may relate to this early traumatic experience he had when his mother died at 9 years old and his world just came crashing down. And I think he was always afraid that that kind of terribly painful trauma would be reactivated by another loss. So he was always defending himself by not forming close relationships. He didn't marry until late in life and so forth. But I think, as a psychiatrist, that we are basically beings of feeling, and we feel without effort. To think takes a great deal of effort. I think Lewis probably had a great deal of feeling. I think that his conversion involved his heart, his feeling, as well as his intellect. But by and large, he was aware primarily of the intellectual aspects of it and tend to downplay the emotional aspects.
Howard, can I ask you, have you read the Screwtape Letters?
No, I haven't, but I've been in contact with a lot of evangelical Christians who, as you know, are very fond of Lewis. And the interesting thing is that they, at least to me anyway, they, more than other people, are really prisoners of their gut, and yet they always insist that belief in God is rational, and they came through irrationally through thought and so on. And it's always struck me as a particularly interesting contradiction.
Howard, thank you for that. I'd like to put that to Kathleen Norris, because Kathleen Norris, he shortly afterwards, or I think it was about the same time, he was doing these radio broadcasts which came together in a collection called Mere Christianity. You wrote the preface to that book and said that in Lewis's writing, Christians are seen with fresh eyes as a sort of underground group with evil gaining the upper hand.
Well, that was written, of course, during the worst time of the war in England. But I think Lewis is an extremely logical thinker, and a very the tone of his writings, whether it's a fantasy book like Narnia or the Screwtape Letters, which is really a comical book, or Mere Christianity, is very reasonable. And he's really wants to put everything in rational terms, and he's very, very good at that. And what I think happened to him was that he began to try to explain his faith in rational terms, and really does an excellent job of doing just that. I think he's trying to have his reason serve his faith.
And I think his reason played a very important role in his transition from one worldview to another. He felt and said often that it was difficult to believe something that you didn't know or understand.
But he
and you needed your intellect to get to know and to understand what you eventually accept
but
or reject.
He actually takes the Old Testament and the New Testament literally, doesn't he? He doesn't sort of water it down at all.
No, well, I think he believes that you should read these documents as you read any good book. You read them intelligently and realize that where parable is used or metaphor is used, you realize that they're metaphor. When Christ says, "I am the door," you don't believe that he is actually a door.
But he railed against people who said Christ was not the Son of God, but just a wise prophet.
Kevin. Oh, yes. I mean, he regarded that as just a very unorthodox, you know, point of view. And as an Orthodox Christian, he said, no, that's, you know, that's really a center of the faith.
But Dr. Nicolai, I mean, the whole premise of this book is you've got guardian devils. I mean, we've always heard of guardian angels, guardian devils. Are we to take this literally?
Well, I think that Lewis believed there exist spiritual beings, and there are indeed angels, but there are also devils and demons. I think people that read the Hebrew scriptures and read the New Testament documents find that these are very real entities. And I think if you were to accept them, you accept this aspect of the spiritual world.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Let's bring Mark into the conversation, calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Hi, Mark.
Hello, how are you?
Fine, and I hope you're fine and warmer down there in Louisville. What would you like to say? So what's your point, Mark?
But I'd like to make a comment here on the heels of what Howard said a moment ago, and some of this may be a rehash of some of the commentary you just made, but you had mentioned earlier two of his other works, Surprised by Joy and also
New Christianity.
Sorry, New Christianity, yes, thank you. I've kind of taken both of those to be maybe a two-part treatise on his own conversion process, and both of them to be sort of autobiographical. With regard to Mere Christianity particularly, he sort of starts in the world of philosophy and goes from essentially nothing to the point of more or less proving on the philosophical grounds that there has to be a God and that Christianity seems to be the most logical conclusion of all the facts that are available. And with that in mind, I'd like to say that there doesn't seem in my mind to be any sort of a problem here between the idea of faith and reason. I think there's a limit to how far reason can take you, and if you go with reason as far as it will take you, you may arrive at the same conclusions that he did, and you may not. But if you do arrive at his point of view, you reach a point beyond which reason can't go, and at that point, I think faith becomes necessary. And I think maybe that's the point he was trying to make, that these two are not opposing views, or not contradictory in any way. They're just various parts of the same thing. And there was another philosopher, I can't remember his name, but there was someone else that came to mind that had made the comment one time that his heart could not embrace that which his mind rejected as false.
Kathleen Norris, you, as I said, did the preface to Mere Christianity. Did you see this as sort of a lengthy treatise of his conversion?
I think there's autobiography in everything he wrote. I mean, to some extent that's true, but he really was trying to address a wartime audience in England and give them some reason to have hope. But, you know, we think of this big contradiction between faith and reason and between the sciences and, say, Christianity. Now, here's the devil speaking in the Screwtape Letters. Above all, do not attempt to his nephew, a demon, do not attempt to use science, I mean the real science, as a defense against Christianity. They will positively encourage him to think about realities he can't touch and see. There have been some sad cases among the modern physicists.
He has another case as well, doesn't he, where he says to his nephew, we were talking about that thing about distracting, that the patient is sitting in the library and suddenly he realizes that something very deep is coming to him. And he instructs Wormwood to say, fancy lunch.
Distract him. The minute he comes upon something deep, a question that might really absorb his soul, why don't you just remind him it's time for lunch, and then he'll just be out the door, and we will have gained, and the enemy, God, will have lost. I mean, it happens all the time.
Dr. Yes. Nicolai, I was wondering, you as a psychiatrist, what you think about this three-way relationship, the very dumb nephew, the unseen patient, and Screwtape trying to direct everything. Is there some sort of interaction there that's particularly poignant, particularly, I don't know, powerful?
Well, I think there's a condescending attitude that Screwtape has toward this person who keeps blundering, which makes it interesting. I wanted to go back to this issue of knowing ourselves and how he tries to get the person to stay away from the patient, to stay away from reason.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly from the sciences, because the sciences cause the person to think, and the physicists think about things that can't be seen. This gets them to think about spiritual things, and this is dangerous. And it's true that in modern-day science, many of the physicists are now talking about questions that only theologians at one time asked. I have a colleague who's won the Nobel Prize in particle physics, and he says that since the Big Bang Theory, physicists are now asking questions that only theologians asked in the past. During the steady state theory, everything was always there. But with the Big Bang theory, we now have to ask what was there before the Big Bang. And they're now asking questions that only theologians asked in the past. Screwtape wanted him to stay away from these issues because they forced the person to think about what he calls universal issues.
The other point that Mark raised was that Lewis had a very broad view of Christianity, that he didn't think one branch of it was better than the other. He did not proselytize at all. Interesting, in the Screwtape letters, here's a bit about Christianity. He says, "My dear Wormwood, I note with grave displeasure that your patient has become a Christian. Don't indulge the hope that you will escape the usual penalties. Indeed, in your better moments, I trust you would hardly even wish to do so. In the meantime, we must make the best of the situation. There's no need to despair. Hundreds of these adult converts have been reclaimed after a brief sojourn in the enemy's camp and are now with us." Kathleen Norris, it's, you know, Christianity, going to church is no guarantee. Indeed, Screwtape says it's a really great place to actually get converts.
Well, certainly. And the whole question of the devil distracting us from what's really important, that we get caught up in issues and arguments in church because we're with other people and we always have disputes with them, that anything which distracts us from our higher purpose, our soul, our deeper ends and deeper things is all to the devil's benefit. So if we get stymied and think, oh, you know, I can't decide between faith and reason, and you paralyze yourself, then we're doing the devil's work, or we're in the devil's hands. If we, there's a marvelous passage in Mere Christianity where he says, when you get to a point in Christianity where you're stymied by one of these things, did this miracle really happen? Or there's some issue that just seems you can't get past it, just sit and wait. Just let it ride, and in time, you know, something may open up, and you'll see a way through the impasse. And I think Lewis is marvelously wise about that. And he also understands, as does Screwtape the devil, that human beings love our little distractions. They really get
and
us
love to feel superior.
Issue. Oh, sure, we can feel superior to the other.
And along with the distractions, there's a tendency to encourage the patient being muddled, to befuddle him.
We'll pick up muddling and fuddling after the break. We're talking good and evil this hour through the eyes of C.S. Lewis. Does the devil get the best tunes, or at least the best lines? 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK to join the devil connection. I'm Judy Swallow. This is The Connection.
I'm a man of wealth and taste. I've been around for a long, long year.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. The Cellucci confirmation hearings are being chaired by Rhode Island Senator Lincoln Chafee. On Here and Now at Noon, we'll hear...
Wormwood, gratitude looks towards the past and love to the present. Fear, avarice, lust, and ambition looks ahead. There you are, Connection listeners, the road to hell. Is C.S. Lewis right? 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. My guest today are poet and author Kathleen Norris and Dr. Armand Nicolai, Professor of Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. Professor Nicolai, have I just stolen your best line?
Well, it's a favorite. It's a favorite of the letters, I think. It's very cogent and very relevant. Lewis says he has the devil say the humans live in time, but our enemy, who's the creator, destines them to eternity. He wants them to attend chiefly to two things. One, to eternity itself, which means being concerned with him, and to that point of time which they call the present, obeying the present voice of conscience, giving thanks for the present pleasure. For the present is the point at which time touches eternity. Far better to make them live in the future.
Indeed, lust and avarice, as that line said, in the future. So, you actually came across C.S. Lewis through Freud, really, didn't you? You started your own dialectic. Tell us about that.
Well, when I finished my medical training, I was asked to teach a course on Freud, and I did so, and I hadn't read his philosophical works, so I thought I would teach emphasizing those works because they're more popular and more widely read. And at Harvard, the students write an evaluation of a course at the end, and they said, this was very interesting, but it's lopsided. It's unbalanced. Why don't you have us read someone who defends and defines that worldview that Lewis attacks.
So you go for a counterbalance to Freud and you come up with C.S. Lewis.
Came up with C.S. Lewis, and when I began reading Lewis, I found that One, Lewis had embraced Freud's worldview for the first half of his life, and then after his transition, he began to write using the arguments that he himself had used when he was an atheist, using Freud's arguments.
So Freud is the powerful, logical atheist.
And so when he begins to write the other way, he answers each of Freud's arguments. I mean, Freud raises an argument, you read Lewis, he attempts to answer it. There's a wonderful dialectic and a striking parallelism in their writing.
Well, then, do you think that Screwtape is Freud?
I think Screwtape indeed is Freud, certainly how he thought and felt before his transition, and a part of himself that he struggled with, perhaps after his transition.
What do you think about that, Kathleen Norris?
Well, it's fascinating, and I'm not that familiar with the Freudian, you know, texts and all of that, but I'm just wondering if Lewis really incorporated a good deal of Freud, because you have said, Dr. Nicolai, that that Lewis ended up as a very good psychologist. He really has a deep understanding of human nature, and part of that I'm sure he got from Freud.
Well, yes, Freud was the father of the new literary criticism when Lewis was teaching. So certainly he was very familiar with Freud's writings and his basic concepts.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK to join the devil connection. Mike joins us now. Mike, hello. First of all, have you read the Screwtape letters?
Yes, I have, actually. And this question is mostly for Dr. Nicolai. As a psychiatrist, I wonder how Lewis would regard, perhaps through Screwtape, the explanation for aberrant human behavior. Is it the devil's work, or is it, as we're finding more and more, especially in psychiatry, would it be perhaps lower dopamine levels?
Ooh, Dr. Nicolai. I'm not sure you have to answer the drugs question, but yes.
I think our knowledge of the mind and the brain, in all of the major emotional disorders, we know that it seems to be both a combination of biology, that is to say, neurotransmitters and so forth, but there also seems to be something else. There seems to be both an inherited predisposition to the disorder, as well as environmental factors that play a role.
Okay, Dr. Nicolai, let's put you on the spot. Do you believe in the devil?
Do I believe in the devil?
Mm.
well, I'll tell you, when I'm asked about my worldview by my students, I tell them that I will share that with them at the end of the course after their last paper is in, and I'll share that with you after the program.
That's cheating. Okay, connection listeners, you'll have to log on. I'll tell you the secret afterwards. Mike, can I ask you? I confessed it on air that I was reading the Screwtape letters and just cringing. Were you cringing?
I was recognizing a lot of my own human frailty in the descriptions. It's been a long time since I've read it, but I think it's a fascinating question to try to understand human behavior in a spiritual way, also with the increasing knowledge we have from the scientific front, as you guys were talking about earlier, especially with regard to chemical levels in the brain and how that affects behavior. Certainly with, you can pop a Prozac and affect your dopamine reuptake levels and feel better. Does that, could you take that to the perhaps illogical extreme and say, well, hey, the devil made me do it, or actually, there's some chemical imbalance in my brain that made me
Mike,
do it.
Mike, thanks
for... Lewis would accept neither of those. I think he would say... he places a great deal of emphasis on the will.
Yeah, not about behavior, really.
I'm sorry?
Not about behavior so much, because he confesses that his behavior is far from perfect.
Right, right. And what we're responsible for is the exertion of our will to act, to behave in a certain way, regardless of how we feel. The neurotransmitters, the chemicals, influence how we feel. We may not feel like doing a certain thing, but Lewis says... that we have control over our will and we're responsible for what we do regardless of how we feel.
Well, indeed, Kathleen Norris, he talks very, very brilliantly about instinct, doesn't he?
Oh, yes.
You know, you can't blame it on instinct. It's the choice between your instinct and what would go against your instinct.
And we want, and we do have the choice. We may take the Prozac, and it may make us feel better, but we are still responsible for at least trying to come to some awareness of who we really are and what created this problem or bad thought or bad feeling in the first place. I mean, if it isn't simply just a matter of biology, if there's something we did or said or should have done or should have said, there may be a reason why we were feeling so lousy, and the Prozac might relieve the symptom, but I think Lewis is more interested in the causes.
Right.
He places a great deal of emphasis on action, on will and behavior, on action. And life for him is a series of decisions that we make by exerting our will to do or fail to do what we know we ought to do.
I mean, the only thing that troubles me about the last 50 minutes is we're talking about this man as if he is one of the world's greatest authorities on religion, an absolute guru. This man defined goodness, had it all sorted. I mean, is it really that way? Isn't this just a funny book, Kathleen Norris?
Well, it is a funny book by a very great writer. I mean, I wouldn't say that he's a... I would think he would laugh and scoff at the idea of being anyone's guru, but I just think he is a remarkable figure, and I come at him as a literary person, you know, as a poet and writer, that he's just a marvelous writer, and he found ways to convey some very, very complex theological and psychological points in very simple language and in a very humorous way.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Let's bring Dana into the conversation. Dana, hello. Are you impressed by C.S. Lewis?
Oh, am I on now? I'm Dana, yeah. Yes, I am, as an intellect and a writer. I find his... I am a Christian myself, but I find his brand of Christianity a little too machismo, a little too combative. If he's talking about the devil as, you know, if he's using the devil as an just as an allegorical figure, then, you know, I can understand that. Like, his book would make sense to me. If he really feels that literally there is a devil, then I feel that this is just part of his combative nature, and this is sort of like an antiquated sort of Manichaean struggle between the sons of light and the sons of darkness. You know, it's... I'm a Christian, but I don't really believe in the devil. I believe the devil is a personification of the dark side of the human mind.
Dana, thanks very much indeed. Sorry I changed your sex.
That's all right. Don't worry about that.
You do bring out the machismo image as well. Dr. Nicolai, what is it, allegorical, or is he? Does he think Screwtape is a real devil here?
Does Lewis believe that Screwtape, does he believe in devils? I think he does. It's interesting that Freud was very preoccupied with the devil. There are over 50 entrees on the devil in his published works, and the book that he quotes from most is Goethe's Faust, where the hero makes a pact with the devil. The last book that he reads is where the hero makes a pact with the devil, now, whether or not he believed in the devil, of course, with his materialist worldview, he didn't believe in spirits. He apparently did not believe in the devil. And yet he was very preoccupied with the devil and with evil in the world. I had an opportunity of talking with Freud's daughter, Anna Freud, who received an honorary degree from Harvard. And she was asking me once whether or not I thought there was someone up there that said, you get cancer, you get tuberculosis, and so forth. How does anyone equate that with a good, all the suffering with a good and omnipotent creator? And I mentioned that Lewis would account for that because of an evil power being in the world. And she seemed to be surprised by that, but very interested in it, and kept coming back to it over and over again. So why she, as a very prominent psychoanalyst, and Lewis were so interested and preoccupied with the devil, I don't know.
Kathleen Norris.
I think the real question is one that we really answer every time we open up the newspaper, is that evil is in the world. Evil exists. And one of the problems with the word like devil is that we've trivialized it. You know, if you're a Satan worshiper, you paint your fingernails black and annoy your parents. It's just we've really made a trivialization of it. And I think the word devil is not very useful sometimes. One of the phrases that I like to use that the 4th century Christian monks used instead of sin was bad thoughts.
Let's bring in a view from Catch and Listen now. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. A quick word from John. John, hello. Hello, John.
Ian mentioned Jung as the other side of the coin on all this. He dealt with the evil in the world, and this in the sense that that if God, just to put it simply, if God is everything, then God is also evil. And at least Christianity up to this point has had a problem dealing with that, because there's supposed to be an absence of evil in Christianity, and that's what we're integrating now in the world. And I'm curious to know what you think. I mean,
okay, John, so basically you're saying Screwtape and Wormwood were God's employees. Kathleen Norris.
It's all part of the same. It's all part of the same thing, and that's the difficulty that we're dealing with.
Kathleen.
And Jung was the one who expressed that very well.
Well, Jung is a poet. I mean, I like him just because of his use of metaphor and so many poetic images. I'm probably a more sympathetic reader of Jung than I am of Freud, but I'm not sure. I mean, there we're reaching sort of. Whenever we get in religion and we're going to the logical extreme, everything becomes, like Alice in Wonderland, extremely illogical. So is God good, or does God contain evil, or somehow contain evil and overcome it? And I'm not sure, and I'm not even at this point, can't even remember what the Orthodox Christian position is supposed to be on
it. A last word, Dr. Nicolai, at the very least, what C.S. Lewis seems to have done is, whether you believe or not, even for atheists, it makes the point that religion, choosing it or rejecting it, is a very significant part of a person's life.
Well, yes. Just a quick response to the other, that Lewis says that God is good and only good, and that even the devil was good when he was created, but had free will and went bad on the basis of that. Your question was that, yes, this is... you see,
it's open to debate about the importance of religion.
If Lewis's worldview is right, then everything else fades in significance.
Dr. Armand Nicolai, Professor of Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you, too, to Kathleen Norris, poet and author of a number of books, including The Cloister Walk. She wrote the foreword to the most recent edition of C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity. Connection listeners, you can continue the C.S. Lewis conversation on our website at theconnection.org. We might even find out whether Dr. Nicolai believes in the devil. I'm Judy Swallow. This is The Connection.
Old devil got to the forks of the road. He said, old lady, you're a hell of a load. Singing fie, diddle-lie, diddle-lie, fie, diddle-lie, diddle-lie, day. The old devil got to the gates of hell. Said, punch a bar up, we'll scorch you well. Singing fie, diddle-lie, diddle-lie, fie, diddle-lie, diddle-lie, day. Out come a little devil, a-dragging a chain. She picked up a hatchet, split out his brains. Singing fie, diddle-lie, diddle-lie, fie, diddle-lie, diddle-lie, day.
This is...